And now it's time for a catch-up on stories that are making headlines around the world on this week's World Report with Justin McCarthy.
Good morning. On today's programme, a worrying rise in drownings among holidaymakers on the Canary Islands and the pubs becoming hubs. Could remote working save Britain's rural drinking establishments? But first to Lebanon, where bank customers have been taking justice into their own hands to access their savings. Cash has been in short supply in the country's banks since the financial crash of 2019, after which savings were frozen as part of measures taken to control the flight of capital. But in recent weeks, frustrated customers have been holding up banks, sometimes with guns, just to get access to their own money. From Beirut, Hannah McCarthy reports.
A couple of military trucks lined the street in Hamra while soldiers sitting inside looked on bored. Traffic slowed to pass the military vehicles, but other than that, it was a normal enough rush hour scene. The paths were filled with people walking home or popping into shops for food for dinner. It was remarkably calm considering that there was a holdup going on in a bank on the street. But given that it was just the latest in a series of bank robberies this year, battle-hardened Beirutis could be forgiven for their nonchalance. Over the weekend, word had spread that Al Baraka Bank and two other banks in Lebanon would be closing. Only temporarily, it was claimed, in order to allow them to restructure their debt. One depositor didn't believe the bank would ever reopen. Amira Bitar didn't think she would ever be able to access her money again. She and her son decided to take matters into their own hands and went to the bank to demand her savings. And it's easy to see why they didn't want to put any more trust in the banks. For almost 2.5 years, Amira had been unable to access over $100,000 held in her savings account at the bank. In 2019, Lebanon's economic decline descended into a full-blown crisis, one of the worst in the world, according to the World Bank. Until then, the Lebanese banking system had effectively been run as a Ponzi scheme, attracting deposits through impossibly high interest rates. And suddenly, it all came crashing down. Overnight, banks imposed capital controls and limited the withdrawal of cash. Not only could depositors not access their money, but inflation was rocketing, meaning that the value of the savings that were held at the bank began to rapidly deplete. As the Lebanese lira lost value against the dollar, people watched on as the value of their savings dropped 10%, 20%, 30%, right the way down to 95% today. The numbers on the screen when they checked their account balance became increasingly meaningless. Many people, like Amira, had opened dollar accounts at Lebanese bank accounts to protect themselves from this type of inflation, but that didn't stop them losing their money. Dollars held at Lebanese bank accounts became known as lollars, and depositors could only withdraw them at reduced rates. I spoke to Mohammed, who owns a stationery store across from the bank where Amira is demanding her money. He said he didn't have much savings in the bank, but he'd managed to withdraw them all in the weeks after capital controls were imposed. He lost about 60% of his savings, but at least he got something. He didn't have $100,000 in his account, though, like the woman who was in the bank demanding it back, he said. He wouldn't hold up a bank himself, but he gets why other people do. Lebanon today is a country run by a sectarian mafia that provides no services and builds no infrastructure other than what they need to extract everything they can for themselves. The end result is a country where buying food, electricity and water is now unaffordable for many families. A serious illness can now mean a medical bill for tens of thousands of dollars. It can force even those who were comfortably middle class before the crisis to stare down the barrel of poverty. In September, Sally Hafiz held up a bank in Beirut with a toy gun she borrowed from her nephew. One bank customer said that Sally doused gasoline everywhere inside and took out a lighter and threatened to light it. For months, she'd pleaded with the banks to give her back her savings so that she could pay for medical treatment for her sister, who had brain cancer. They told her they could only give her $200 a month. She said she couldn't take it anymore when her sister had a baby and told Sally that she would have to raise it. Sally succeeded in getting $17,500 that day before going on the run. Robbers like these have become instant heroes in Lebanon, where the majority of the population is now living in poverty, while the ruling class remain in power and refuse to enact the reforms that might start to improve the economic situation. In general, there are good policy reasons for why people should not go waltzing into banks demanding their savings at gunpoint. But banks require trust almost as much as they require capital to survive, and the Lebanese have neither left to give. For World Report, I'm Hannah McCarthy in Beirut.
Next to the Canary Islands, where this past year 60 people have died from drowning, Drowning has been identified as the biggest cause of accidental death on the islands. The vast majority of drownings are of tourists, many of whom decided to enter the water when there were adverse sea conditions. But pool drownings are also on the increase, as Cliona O'Flynn reports now from Tenerife.
It might not be the statistic you want to dwell on as you're packing your suitcase and checking your passport is still in date, but the latest figures show that drowning is the primary cause of accidental death in the Canary Islands. Twice as many are dying in the water as are on roads annually. Not taking into account migratory deaths, those who die making treacherous journeys by sea in small boats from the west coast of Africa, over 60 people have died this year in our seas and pools. And the trend at the end of November suggested it was possible the islands would supersede the 2021 record of 64 victims. Obviously, there are always deaths that are sadly unavoidable, but the majority of drownings are not. And too many are down to risk-taking, ignoring warnings, or warnings not being given. One of the other small but relevant factors here too is that our sea is the Atlantic, a lot colder than the Mediterranean that laps the shores of the rest of Spain. And while a dip in the sea here won't be as cold as home, it's still surprisingly fresh to many who are used to holidaying in the Spanish Peninsula. According to experts, cold water shock is not simply about the temperature of the water, it's about the change in the temperature your body experiences. So as ground temperatures continue to reach the mid-20s here, people on holidays are enjoying summer weather but colder seas, and a plunge is not always recommended. That cold water shock that your body experiences is real and can cause cardiac problems. While Canarian residents still take avoidable risks, the sad news this month from the security forces is that of the numbers who have drowned this year, 8 out of every 10 were tourists. 70% in the sea, 30% in pools, which is also an increase on pool deaths over previous years. Sebastian Quintana is an expert in water deaths and a spokesperson for Canaries 1500 kilometres de costa, or Canaries 1500 kilometres of coast, an organisation created to raise awareness of water-related dangers and prevent accidents and deaths. The organisation is also vocal on the politics of prevention. Quintana says November was the worst month of 2022 for water deaths, with 9 in the first 2 weeks, a record for the islands. He is also part of an international group who are working on prevention and says there are two common elements in aquatic accidents. The first is that people drown due to bad sea conditions, potentially where warnings have been given but the bathers were unaware of them. The second recurring element in drowning, and increasingly reported, says Sebastian, is related to the boom in tourism numbers after the COVID pandemic, with the majority of deaths from drowning being foreign visitors dying on holidays, the dark lining in a silver cloud. Not all coastal areas or beaches have regular warnings published, so many visitors don't realise the dangers of the local seas. Quintana insists that in too many cases, the locally and regionally issued alerts about high seas and rough seas don't even reach the tourists. He says this information should, for instance, be given to hotel guests by the staff, and obviously that more beaches and dangerous coastal areas need to be better signposted. Up to 85% of deaths in the sea happened when conditions were not ideal, but perhaps warnings were not given or adequately publicised. And of course, the services that are giving the official weather warnings and information operate in the main in Spanish. Although some town councils, like Adeje, do publish all emergency information in English too. So having hotels play a more active role in transmitting important information could be vital. This is not to say that there are cases when both tourists and residents ignore warnings, and this has caused unintentional deaths on an annual basis. Sebastian Quintana says there is a need now more than ever for more education and an increased awareness about the dangers of water safety. The World Health Organization has also stated that the risks of drowning are still being ignored, adding that this is the second highest cause of accidental death in Europe in the under 20s. They have now said that this is a public health issue and have insisted from the start of this year that governments need to introduce new laws and work to increase public awareness in order to reduce water-related deaths. So, if you are planning to spend Christmas in the Canaries, remember to bring your passport, your sun cream, and your common sense, and ensure that you have a very happy holiday indeed. This is Cliona O'Flynn for World Report in Tenerife.
Finally, we go to the UK, where, like Ireland, rural pubs have been struggling for survival. In the past 20 years, a quarter of pubs in the UK have closed down. The British Beer and Pub Association warned that the cost of doing business is completely out of control, and the decline was accelerated by the pandemic, as many customers who stayed away during the lockdown did not return. However, some chains are now trying a new tactic to attract more customers by encouraging those who work remotely to do their job from the pub. But will it be enough to keep the beer taps running in the historic trade? Russell Padmore reports from London.
The iconic British pub dates back to the days of the Romans, whose long straight roads led to the building of many taverns along the way, selling wine to thirsty travellers. But the drink made from grapes soon gave way to the local favourites, ale and cider. Over the centuries, the number of pubs grew, surviving the invasions of Vikings and a civil war. In fact, many of today's establishments have been on the same site for hundreds of years. But in recent years, the number of pubs here has continued to decline, with industry reports showing 13,000 pulled down the shutters permanently in the last two decades, and that accelerated during the pandemic. According to analysis by a property market company, more than 400 pubs closed in the UK in the last year. The cost of living crisis has restricted spending by customers, and spiralling energy bills have put many independently owned bars out of business. The hospitality sector publication, The Morning Advertiser, is warning 7 in 10 British pubs are unlikely to survive soaring costs this winter. Drinkers would be alarmed to hear predictions that the price of a pint could rise to more than £9. That's almost €11. The Green King pub group has warned that without intervention by the government, jobs will be lost as, and I quote here, beloved locals across the country close. The pandemic boosted the number of people working from home, and that's prompted the industry to adopt a new tactic, encourage people working remotely to do their job from a pub. There is the advantage of pleasant company instead of working at home alone, and no interruptions by noisy family members. Workers can take advantage of reliable Wi-Fi and access to refreshment, perhaps though a coffee and not a beer. The pub chain Young's has been offering a package of a drink and a sandwich for £15. That's about €17 to remote workers. The bar group Fuller's has been doing so well with an even cheaper package for its 300 pubs that it dropped it. The company told me it's no longer needed because most people who want to work from the pub just turn up and start. It's seen as a good source of income, especially as pubs can get customers during the day when business is usually quieter. It's definitely a sign of social change as employers accept more hybrid working. But then again, there are possible drawbacks. The image of staff taking part in an online video meeting from a pub may not be acceptable for some companies. People who've lost positive interaction with colleagues in the workplace could replace it by mingling with friends in the pub. But then again, while they are supposed to be working, they could get distracted by music in the bar or the temptation to have a beer. But the novel idea of working remotely from a local pub reveals how the sector is facing up to the challenge amid the cost of living crisis. According to research by the British Institute of Innkeeping, 2/3 of businesses are operating in the red because of escalating gas and electricity bills. And as soaring prices of heating hit their customers, many pubs are planning to act as so-called warm places this winter, opening up to give people who can't afford to heat their homes a place to go. The abbreviation WFH, short for working from home, has entered everyday language thanks to the increase in employees doing their job remotely. But will the three letters WFP, working from a pub, become just as familiar in the future? The bar trade may have to call time on that idea. The number of British pubs offering a remote workplace could be significantly reduced in the future, as many of these iconic establishments are forced to call last orders and close. The industry fears more landlords could lose the battle to stay in business amid the cost of living crisis. For World Report in London, I'm Russell Padmore.
Well, that's it from World Report for today. The programme was edited by Elaine Devlin. If you want to listen back, you can go to rte.ie/World Report or wherever you get your podcasts. We're back again at the same time next week. Until then, from myself, Justin McCarthy, and all the team, thanks for listening and take care.